I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Greetings, Grapple fans. Welcome to another edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the AI podcast channel. I am your host, Danny Wales, joined as ever by my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra. And Mo, we do have plenty to talk about tonight, not just Elimination Chamber, but also, to my mind, WWE programming has stepped up a gear on the road to WrestleMania. There we go, I'm getting the puns in already.
You love your puns, don't you? No, you're absolutely right. Just when they needed to really hit their stride, they really did so this week on both Raw and SmackDown, Raw especially. And that's exactly what they needed as we now hit the closing stretch, on that road to WrestleMania, as you say. So, it set things up nicely for the next few weeks. Before then, obviously, we've got the Raw pay-per-view in Fastlane. But they're certainly starting to up the gears, and it'll be full throttle from here on in.
Yeah, we can think up lots and lots of different analogies along the way. I'm sure I can come up with more puns than Michael Cole or anyone on the WWE broadcasting booth. But let's start with Elimination Chamber this past Sunday night, SmackDown only pay-per-view. I've got to say, more on the whole, as an event, it was okay. It wasn't anything special other than the main event, the chamber match itself. I've got to say, I was really, really impressed with it. I really enjoyed it thoroughly.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, we speculated last week on the preview that it should be a really, really good contest. And, if anything, it might have exceeded expectations. I mean, we had our expectations going in, given it had the likes of Cena and AJ Styles involved. But it turned out, fantastically well. And, just an ideal way in which to crown a new champion. But I mean, that's something we'll come on to. But yeah, certainly a great way to end that show, which, as you say, was not a fantastic show by any means, but it certainly had its moments. And I didn't expect a great deal from it, but overall, I was more leaning towards it being a good show than a bad show.
Yeah, we'll certainly get into it in depth. Before we do get there, just quickly, before I actually forget to bring this up later on, a few people not too happy with the modifications that were made to the chamber. You know, that they changed the pods slightly, obviously made them a little lower so the guys can get on top. They got rid of the metal on the outside and replaced it with padding. And, some of the chains were removed, so we had sort of that that perspex in there. But I think that I like the changes. I think the change to the perspex made it obviously easier for the cameras getting in there for vision. Obviously just made it a bit more user friendly for the guys to work it. And I do think the padding on the outside, for me, that makes sense. You know, as much as we want to see all brutality and things like that, I don't want to see guys injuring themselves constantly, especially, less than 2 months, 6 weeks away from WrestleMania. So what about you, Mo? What were your thoughts on the modifications to the chamber itself?
Yeah, I thought it looked nice. I don't really see why people would be upset or offended by it by any means. You know, it was very slightly different to what we normally expect. The overall structure, though, was broadly similar in size, if not exactly the same. It was just the entrances into the, you know, the pods were slightly amended. And as you say, there was padding instead of that kind of mesh deal. But that in no way really for me detracted from the contest. If anything, it might have slightly added to it. So, you know, we had a great moment involving the perspex and some two or three great spots off of the top of those pods too. So, you know, anyone who was disappointed by that was really focusing on the wrong thing and distracted by what was an excellent match.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you've got complaints, hit the bricks. So let's go back to the start of the event. Mickey James and... Oh, my God, I forgot her name already. You see, Becky she lost Lynch. The title. Becky Lynch, she lost the title and I forgot her name. That's how irrelevant she's become. I'm only joking.
Don't worry, I did the same a few weeks ago.
I thought this was a decent match. Nothing spectacular and to me suggested that there's still more to come from these two.
You know what? I actually thought it was a good match. You know, that we're allowed to go out there and have a decent length match, just short of 12 minutes, which Mickey isn't really used to from a previous stint in the WWE when, you know, far too often she only got to go out there for 4 or 5 minutes, occasionally up to around the 10-minute mark, but really didn't get to show what she was capable of. She was always one of the better workers in the WWE, but nonetheless, it was good to see her allowed time to show what she can do. And I thought she did it very well. It was a good match.
Just one thing. You've got to give Becky Lynch. You've got to give Mickey James credit as well. I mean, as David Otunga pointed out, she's been away from WWE for 7 years. So, but there was no signs of ring rust from her.
No, there wasn't. No. You know,
7 years from the ringer.
That's right. Yeah. So. You know, it's interesting how at different points the indie scene either exists or it doesn't exist. So, yeah, I mean, Mickey James, I mean, she has actually been away and had a child with the wrestler who was known as Magnus in TNA. But, you know, for most of that time she's been away from WWE, she has still been an active wrestler. She looked fine. They had a good match in my view. And I thought that the way it was, the way it panned out, you know, there's certainly more to it. And we saw some more, certainly the two nights on at SmackDown.
Yeah. So what about the tag team title turmoil match? My God, that's a tongue twister.
It is.
For the number of teams in it and the whole design of the match, I don't think it was ever going to be something that you can really sort of build and get, you know, a classic going. But I think given the circumstances, it wasn't too bad. Obviously, an opportunity to showcase everyone, but felt a bit more like a TV match than a pay-per-view match to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was different in that we don't often see these turmoil-type matches on TV, but it was almost like a collection of short TV matches all kind of stuck together. And, you know, if the purpose was to try and get any of the teams over for that matter. I thought it probably didn't achieve its objective. You know, Jordan Gable obviously came out of it retaining the tag team straps and, you know, in the end they beat the Ascension. And it did look like, in fact, I did actually feel that the Ascension might just pull off a big upset because, before the Ascension fought Jordan Gable at the end, Jordan Gable fought the Usos before that, and after the Usos lost, they left American Alpha Lane, didn't they? And the Ascension then came in, and it looked like it was almost a formality that they might beat the tag champs, but they didn't. And, you know, the champs retained, and The Ascension's push lasted all of about 7 days, and they'll be back to being jobbers again. But I thought this was an average match, really.
Yeah, I've got to say, look, the Usos and American Alpha, they can have a good match together. They've got some good chemistry there. They've got a backstory. For me, it makes sense. Those two teams can get together. They can build up. They can have a good match. And then it's got to be perfectly timed for the revival then to make the step up from NXT. And then we can see them face off, because it was as much as it wasn't great to watch this, it was another reminder of just how thin on the ground the tag team roster really is on SmackDown.
Well, that's right. I mean, they've got six teams, but you know, most of these six teams are pairings that the fans just don't care about. And, you know, we've seen in NXT, haven't we, over several years, that you can have five, six, seven teams and the tag team roster feels very strong, because if the teams are over, if the pairings have good chemistry, then, you know, it can feel like a strong, vibrant division. This one doesn't. And, you know, as we've talked about before, American Alpha really needs to be paired with, you know, good dance partners in the likes of the Revival, for example, to help them get over, because at this moment in time, American Alpha just don't have that perfect adversary that can really help to take him to that next level. So hopefully after WrestleMania, we will see changes to the division, and we'll see some life breathe into it. But at this moment in time, it certainly feels stale.
Yeah, absolutely. And I negated to mention that before that match, of course, it was the heel taking on two baby faces in a handicap match. Slightly against the normal way of doing things. But the heel, Dolph Ziggler, getting a great babyface reaction when he took to injuring Apollo Crews with a chair. This was just another filler match, and just an example of, I think, of the fans' kind of disenchantment with the way some people are really presented.
Well, that's right. I mean, the booking for this was atrocious. You know, Apollo Crews, who's had a real problem getting over with the fans as a face, and Kalisto, who at times has actually had a good reaction as a face. You know, the booking here was just so arse backward, wasn't it? That, you know, neither one was going to get over. I mean, Kalisto came out, you know, he was injured, and, you know, at the start of the contest, and then, you know, he came out right towards the end, where it was about another minute or two to go, and he didn't really get much of a reaction, even though he should have. And in the meantime, Crews was just made to look like a jobber. And it was just awful booking all round. I don't even think it did anything for Dolph Ziggler as a heel. You know, he still didn't get a fantastic reaction as a heel. And because he was put in almost like a spot such that you almost feel sorry for him, or you're rooting for him because he's outnumbered, you know, that's not exactly going to do wonders for his heel run. So it was just a botch up all round, and you know, the match itself wasn't that great. So this was certainly the low light for the show as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, you feel yourself rooting for the heel. There's something wrong there. And the fact that the crowd is singing "Thank You, Ziggler" as he was taken to a cruise with a chair—that that's not good. It's not good. I think they really need to think about quite how they're doing this. I mean, Ziggler for me can work as a heel, but it's the presentation's got to be right. And right now, you know, where he's working and how things are being presented, it's not too good. But anyway, moving on. Nikki Bella and Natalia. This one ended in a double count out, so obviously there's a blow off match here to come at some point. We got a little bit of a tease at some point through the night as well with Nikki Bella and Maryse, and then rumours are alluded to last week of, you know, Cena and Nikki Bella against Miz and Maryse at WrestleMania. Who knows? Maybe there is something in that. But this Nikki Bella and Natalya match, I've got to say, Mo, it was better than I expected.
Well, I'm not going to say reluctantly, but yeah, I can't disagree, can I? Nikki Bella had one of her best ever WWE matches in this contest. You know, they had another long match. It was just over 13 minutes. And they paced it very well. And, you know, it helped that it was in Nikki Bella's hometown. So, you know, she was more over than she perhaps normally is. And Natalya certainly played the role of heel fantastically well in this contest. And they built up to a nice little match. I mean, had a nice ending. Just a shame that it resulted in a double count out. I thought that, you know, it was primed and ready for Nikki Bella to go over. But, you know, we know the rule of Vince McMahon, and that is that if anyone wrestles in their hometown, they just aren't allowed to go over and win. Or if they do win, then it has to be a bit of a tainted victory. So this was about as good as we were going to get. And yeah, it certainly left me interested in wanting to see more of this. And I actually think, you know, like I was saying last week, it's not been a bad rivalry the way it's been booked. They fed off of the Total Divas and injected a bit of reality to it. So it's been a bit more interesting than, you know, your typical, you know, women's division feuds. So, yeah, more of it, I think, is to come in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think they'll conclude it in the next few weeks, and then let's see what they put together for Mania. Let's just see. There might be something in it. Anyway, next up, Randy Orton beating Luke Harper in what I thought was a good match. You know, I think Luke Harper again got to show with a guy who's a top echelon worker, you know, just what a good worker he is. And I think with the right opportunity and the right presentation, you know, they could still do something really, really good with Luke Harper.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'd go as far as to say this was bordering on an excellent match. I thought it was a really, really good match. You know, it started off slow. I mean, you know, we got the usual Randy Orton chin locks of doom, which killed a good several minutes early on. So it had a slow pace to it early on in the first half of the contest. Second half, though, it certainly picked up. And, you know, we had some, you know, really good near falls. And the ultimate end was an RKO out of nowhere for Randy Orton, and victory for him, you know, to keep him strong going into WrestleMania. But Harper certainly made a fantastic showing for himself, and you know, certainly demonstrate to everyone that, you know, he's somebody who can have a viable career in the WWE as a singles competitor.
Yeah, I think they just have to work out exactly what they're going to do with him, and then go with it. For me, just go with it. It's just that working out part of it. But he's got great facials. He's, you know, he is such a good worker, and I think the crowds sort of believe him. You know, whether he's working babyface or working heel, I think he has that believability about him. He's just got this something about his character, and yeah, I'd like to see them do more with him, and so hopefully there's more to come. And obviously,
well, that's right.
And obviously Randy Orton has to be kept strong, bearing in mind, you know, he's won the Royal Rumble and he should be going into the main event of WrestleMania.
Absolutely, yeah. But I mean, on Harper, you know, he's a fantastic worker. He's really underrated. But you're right, you're absolutely right. He needs to get away from this whole Wyatt family gimmick, and you know, they need to develop a new character for him. And that's, I think, the only way that he can really get away from this whole gimmick that he's had for the last several years. And they've been somewhat successful with Braun Strowman, who, whilst he hasn't really changed his look a great deal since his Wyatt family days, there has been, you know, those little tweaks to his character and his presentation which have made a difference. And you know, I think that's what's helped him to get over, despite being a far inferior worker to Harper.
Yeah, I think tweaks is the key word there. Tweaks rather than massive changes. So let's hope the future's bright for Luke Harper. Before we get to the main event, though, Naomi winning the women's title from Alexa Bliss, I've got to say I was surprised that the title switched hands here. I certainly wasn't expecting this one. Not a fantastic match, but decent. Okay.
Yes. You're quite right. To be honest, I can't actually remember what my prediction was for this contest last week. I think I predicted Alexa to win and retain the title, and then to go on perhaps in a four-way contest at WrestleMania, something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, Naomi won the title. Again, it's felt more like, well, here's someone who's been with us for several years and, you know, she's been a good professional. She's worked hard. So let's reward her. Was that the right thing for the title? I'm not so sure. I think that Alexa could have done with a decent lengthy title reign, certainly going into WrestleMania. And maybe that was a time for Alexa to drop the belt rather than on this show. But no, I haven't really got a problem with Naomi winning the title. You know, she's a talented worker. I love her entrance. It's one of the best in the company. And, she's got some personality. And, you know, the reaction she got from the fans as well after the win, you know, was superb. And, it clearly made it very emotional and made for a good moment. So, the match wasn't great, but what ensued afterwards certainly was. So thumbs up for that.
Yeah, the way they put it over at the end, you know, and the interview, you know, she broke down. I think they really got across that it really meant something, and, you know, her time at the WWE and everything. I think that in itself was good. That part of it was a success. But you mentioned a little, 5 minutes ago more about hometown. You know, people going to the hometown and usually losing. Naomi's got the belt. She got her WrestleMania, which is in her hometown.
Oh dear. The curse of the hometown. So
we know how long title change. Yeah, so we know how long her title reign's going to last then.
Indeed.
Anyway, so let's
enjoy
get
it
to,
whilst it lasts. No, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy it while it lasts, which won't be long. Let's get to that main event then, the chamber match. Love the way they started it off with Cena and AJ Styles. You know, continuing on from their fantastic match at the Rumble and the whole thing that they've got going. I thought it was a great way to start the match off. And these two have still got more matches in them for me.
Yes, you're quite right. They've got great chemistry together, haven't they? Once again, their work in this contest was exemplary. Coming off a 5-star match, several weeks ago at the Rumble. And, they had a fantastic match at SummerSlam too. And, it wouldn't surprise me if they pair off against each other at WrestleMania, because, you know, we had a title change in this contest. Neither wrestler will have a title going into WrestleMania. Unless they decide to have that mixed tag match involving Cena, Nikki Bella, Maryse, and The Miz, who else better than AJ Styles to be Cena's WrestleMania opponent? And if they do, we're guaranteed another excellent match. They were, again, fantastic in this contest. And I thought ably supported by the others as well. They certainly made a good contribution to this contest and certainly added to it, especially towards the end when the man that we speculate could walk away the champion indeed did, with Bray Wyatt winning the championship in this bout and surprising everyone, because the reaction from the crowd certainly suggested that none of them expected Bray Wyatt to overcome the likes of John Cena and AJ Styles en route to winning that championship. So a turn up for the books as far as most fans were concerned, but sets things up beautifully for the big split that could potentially occur in the coming weeks leading up to WrestleMania, between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton.
Yeah, I thought aside from it being a really good match and really enjoyable, like you say, I do like the way that they started it with Cena and AJ. That was nice to get them back two together and then really kind of really kick the match off at a great pace. But they also used the match for a way of setting up feuds, and I think that was smart, and it's good to see them do that. Obviously, we're looking at Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin now going off and probably fighting over the Intercontinental title. And interestingly as well is, you know, just on this thing with The Miz and John Cena, whether it does become something. I mean, The Miz there, he wasn't in there that long. He got eliminated by John Cena. So these little things, I do wonder whether this is actually going to happen. But, you know, I like planting these little seeds. And the fact that they've used it to build on something else, as opposed to it's just about this match and this match only. And yeah, great finale at the end. And it was, I really loved the way that the crowd had really got so into it. And you could tell they, you know, they were so into just seeing, you know, Bray Wyatt and AJ Styles there, because it's something that we hadn't seen before. And it was, I think the last three in there, you know, Styles, Cena and Bray, the way that they worked together, I thought it was so good. And almost like a measure of where Bray seems to have picked his work back up recently from I don't know quite how you'd describe his last year to year and a half, but I don't think his work was anywhere near as good. I think he's really, really picked it up recently. And I think this is kind of testament to that.
Yeah, yes, that's right. And, you know, it could be that he was told in the last several weeks, right, you know, we're going to have you as champion heading into WrestleMania to face Randy Orton. And knowing that the title was coming, that was surely a big motivator for him. And, you know, he certainly hung in there and more than held his own alongside very fantastic in-ring talents, likes of John Cena and AJ Styles. And I certainly expect that even going into WrestleMania, you know, he'll look to put in a very strong performance with Randy Orton. And, you know, it's good to see them do something with him. And it shows that they've got some faith in him as well. It's more than just, you know, a mid-card nobody. The fact that they've had enough faith in him to give him not only the title, but also, therefore, by default, land him in a prominent spot at WrestleMania means that they see that he has, you know, got some great talent. And I'd like them to do something creative with him as well. One of my big criticisms about the WWE, where Bray Wyatt's concerned, is that his gimmick is one that, you know, needs, you know, really clever angles, skits, segments that are taped and take, you know, filmed away from, you know, the normal WWE setting, away from the ring, away from backstage. You know, take him out to the woods and, you know, to the kind of environments that you'd expect a character like that to be found in. And, you know, that kind of stuff in his element is the kind of stuff that, you know, sticks out in the memory. You know, often we see segments and interviews on Raw or SmackDown, and, you know, 5 minutes later, you've forgotten about them. But doing something that's a bit outside the box, you know, can certainly make more of an impression. And the Bray Wyatt character is one that certainly would suit stuff being done away from your usual WWE setting. And if they do that, you know, it can really, you know, capitalize on him and his character and his promo ability, because there's just a fantastic character there that's just screaming to get out, but it's been with, you know, it's been held back because of the constraints of the PG era. And I hope that in the lead up to WrestleMania, with the inevitable split with Randy Orton, we get to see some of that.
Well, I mean, just on that, you know, the split with Randy Orton, as we all expect to see, and probably expected to see some of that on SmackDown. Interesting the way that they took it, you know, interesting, intriguing almost as well, that, you know, he got to beat Cena and AJ in a triple threat match. He got the, you know, the clean win. That's it. You know, that it's done. He's won the match. He's beaten them both. He's, you know, he's kind of cemented his position as the champion. And then out comes Randy Orton and, you know, says, I'm not going to face you. I pledge my allegiance to you. It's, where do you see this one heading then? Because it was a kind of a different sort of route to take on that one.
I thought it was quite cleverly done, actually. Everyone would have expected the two to face off and potentially have a falling out on this edition of SmackDown. And clearly that didn't happen. So the idea must be to just hold it off for a couple of weeks, maybe even 3 weeks out. You know, they might wait as late as that and then pull the trigger, then have the split. And they want to build to it first before the split happens. So rather than just say, okay, well, because Orton is the challenger for the title, and now that Bray's won it, that automatically they need to fall apart at the seams. No, we won't go there that quickly. Let's get to that point later on down the line. So it was nice to see, because I think most people expected them to split straight away. So that was nicely done, and intrigued to see they get to that point.
Yeah, nice that it wasn't too predictable. Do you think then that the way that this is going to sort of unfold, that this means what we're leading to here is that Bray Wyatt's going in as a babyface? You know, they're finally going to turn him babyface after he's been getting what is pretty much a babyface reaction for years, and it's Randy Orton going in as the heel, you know, as the guy who's basically sort of, you know, playing mind games and has set this all up, you know, from the very start. It's the way that he's kind of, you know, set things in motion, and we see the, you know, the vindictive heel side of Randy Orton. Do you think that this is the way that they're going to set it up?
I think that's a distinct possibility, absolutely. You know, one of the things that there is a problem with on the WWE SmackDown side is a lack of strong baby faces. They've obviously got Cena, but not a great deal else. I mean, if you look at the main event of Elimination Chamber, that's Elimination Chamber, Mauro Ranallo, not Hell in a Cell. Yes, it's, you know, we saw John Cena, we saw Dean Ambrose, and the rest were heels. And, you know, looking through the rest of the card, you know, certainly a shortage of strong baby faces. So they need new, fresh baby faces. And, you know, we've seen Randy Orton there so often. And he's somebody who I think is much better suited to a heel. So this is the ideal platform and exactly the right person to set Bray Wyatt up as a new baby face. I think if he does turn face, I think he'd be really successful at it. But the interesting thing with that is that, you know, I was just a moment ago talking about how they need to do, you know, that kind of out of the box type stuff. Well, that's the sort of stuff that actually could get him over as a babyface, you know, in that kind of reverse psychology way, which WWE always struggles to really cotton onto, you know, and that's why they have such a struggle with getting faces over as faces and keeping heels, you know, portrayed and viewed as heels, because they're not tapped into the way that modern fans react to talents these days. You know, the booking is still very traditional, and you know, it's just not smart to the way that fans react. And that's why, you know, so many of the faces that they push are treated as bigger heels than the heels themselves.
Yeah, as if the 1990s never actually happened. You know, if they'd not learned anything from, you know, the mid to late 90s, when they actually just, you know, kind of let go and thought, you know what, fine, we'll just go along with it. And it, hell, you know, it actually worked. You know, perhaps they need to go onto their own network, go back through their own libraries and just see what really does work. You know, what works so successfully in the biggest boom of the industry in you know, the history of the industry. It's it's quite incredulous, really, isn't it?
Oh, it is. That's right. You know, they just need to fire up the WWE network, And get there 2 or 3 dozen writers just to watch that network. Look at, you know, episodes of Raw, well, Monday Night Raw from the Attitude Era or Nitro. And look at why the NWO were such popular characters despite ostensibly being the heels. You know, and learning the lessons from that. And, you know, these are lessons that are now 20 years old. You know, that's how far back the NWO go back. And, yeah. You know, it's all there. You know, it shouldn't really be difficult. You know, the people to portray as heels should be the people that, you know, fans view as dickheads. You know, and it doesn't have to be that, well, because that person is cheating or pulling all these types of old school, you know, rule breaker tactics, as they used to call them, that therefore they should be the heel and the person that abides by the rules should be the babyface. You know, we're long, long, long past that kind of mentality, and fans don't look at it in that way. And, you know, they just need to be smarter to, you know, how, what fans like, what they don't like, and then book characters accordingly, and create a facial divide on that basis. You know, it really shouldn't be difficult, but for some reason they find it very, very hard.
Yeah, if only the writers could go back and watch how a certain Stone Cold Steve Austin became the biggest selling name in the industry, in the history of the industry, at the same company that they're working for. So, yeah. Anyway, so, you know, switching gears then over to Monday Night Raw. Quite a momentous Raw, I've got to say. It was. It wasn't too bad. I mean, I thought it was quite a good show for the first couple of hours, but that last hour of Raw, that was one of the best last hours of Raw that I've seen in quite some time.
Oh, absolutely it was, wasn't it? Now, we've been talking on this show for quite a while now about the relationship between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, and speculating about when they would split, because the obvious match for both of those, going back many, many months now, the WrestleMania match had to be between those two. And, you know, we finally got that big breakup, didn't we? That has been teased on at least 2 or 3 occasions in the last several months. But yeah, we finally got it. And it was one of the great Raw angles of recent times. You know, this whole ceremony to celebrate that friendship.
The Festival of Friendship. I've got to say, the Festival of Friendship was right up there with This Is Your Life, with the Rock and Sock. That for me, it was right up there with that. I thought it was superb.
Even with a cheesy Las Vegas magician to boot. So, you know, what more can you ask for? But I had a new list. How can we forget? You know, and that was the point. That was a big turning point in that relationship. Kevin Owens was gifted with all sorts of presents by Jericho, and then he returned the favor with a list. And then Jericho said, hold on, why is my name on here? Picks that list out of the box. And what does it say? The list of KO. And that's when he turned on his friend, didn't he, Kevin Owens? And it was beautifully done, wasn't it? It was just a fantastically delivered angle. Just the whole segment was first class, you know, the comedy of it, the attack, you know, the way that he beat him down. It was just fantastically well done. And the crowd reaction was fantastic to boot. So, you know, one of the best segments, not only of this year, but of any year. It was one of the all-time great angles. And, you know, credit to Jericho, credit to Kevin Owens. You know, they pulled off something that will live long in the memory.
Yeah, having criticised the writers, I mean, if that was the writer's idea in the way that was presented, you know, the list of KO, then credit to them. I do suspect that there's probably a good great deal of input there from Owens and Jericho, probably particularly Jericho on that. I mean, it was just perfectly done, and the way that the crowd bought into it and went with it as well. You know, as he lifted it out, you know, asking his name, the timing was exemplary. Why is my name on it? And then, yeah, lifting it out, the reveal, the crowd, you heard the crowd, oh, right before he hits him. It was just that the whole, everything, like you say, you know, they've got great chemistry, they've got great comic timing, and we've seen that for so long. They showed there as well that they have just great timing, full stop. And it was the way that it was delivered was just absolute perfection. It really, really was. And it was such a memorable way to break them up. And, you know, it was, for what we've seen over the months, and we've enjoyed it so much, it was the perfect way to do it. I think it really deserved something memorable, and we certainly got it. And I've got to say as well, having asked for it recently, you know, wanting to see slightly less of the comedy from Owens, even though he's good at it, and more of the nasty, vindictive, you know, evil, maniacal Kevin Owens that we saw in NXT. I think we certainly got that here, and probably just in time as well, ready for his match against Goldberg at Fastlane.
Well, that's right. Yeah. It's just setting up really nicely now. You know, with how the whole main event of Fastlane could transpire, and, you know, either scenario, whether it's Goldberg winning the title or Kevin Owens winning the title, will result in a very interesting title match. You know, whether it's Owens versus Jericho, given the talk about Jericho potentially disappearing for a while to tour with Fozzy, you know, is that a swerve, or is that really going to happen? And then obviously, you know, the other side of it is, well, if Goldberg wins a belt, which I've predicted all along, then, you know, that's going to add even more spice to what already will be a fantastically, you know, eagerly awaited contest between he and Brock Lesnar. You know, especially the way that's been booked. I think it's been booked really, really well. And, you know, if the title's at stake there, you know, imagine it, you know, Lesnar winning the title and finally getting a victory over Goldberg. It will make up for, with that title, the two losses, as well as getting that humiliation of being eliminated at the Royal Rumble in such a fashion by Goldberg. So, certainly sets things up very, very nicely, not only leading into Fastlane, but then the weeks between that and WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was. That's it. Things are really moving along, and we've got all these little subplots set up. So, the end of Raw, though. I'm kind of torn on this. I'm a massive Bayley fan. I've thought she's been brilliant. That from me first getting into watching NXT was just as Bayley was beginning to rise. This was before she'd ever won the title. It was, I think she'd had a hand injury, and then she couldn't get anywhere near. This was the time I was just first getting into NXT, and you could see the crowd were really getting behind her. And her winning the NXT women's title, it was a long, you know, drawn out thing. You know, it really meant something when she finally got there. So I'm torn, as much as I'm a fan of Bayley, to see her win the title already on TV before we've even got to WrestleMania. I've got to say I was slightly disappointed. I just feel like it's too soon. It wasn't the time yet, and it didn't mean as much as it should mean when it's on a, you know, a really, really big stage.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, what the WWE has decided to do is to come up with this streak gimmick for Charlotte, and, you know, this whole streak gimmick about she never loses on these pay-per-view shows. And what is she now, 15-0 or something like that, is she?
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. But she loses nearly every week on Raw, though.
Well, that's right. So the whole idea is that, you know, she wins on the bigger shows, but loses the belts on TV. And, you know, it almost certainly points in the direction of Charlotte winning the title for, I think it would be the fifth time, I think, at WrestleMania. Whether that's in a singles contest with Bayley, or, as you know, we've speculated, in a three or four way contest, possibly involved, well, almost certainly involving Sasha Banks, and possibly involving Nia Jax. So that's certainly the direction everything seems to be pointing in. I thought the match itself was excellent, though. I thought it was possibly the best women's match we've seen on Raw ever. The way it ended, you know, the fans were up on their feet. They were just going wild. And the post-match celebration was, you know, just superb. You know, Bayley knows how to really milk that reaction and did it fantastically well. So, yeah, I agree, though. It almost felt like WrestleMania was the ideal opportunity, the ideal forum for that title change to happen. But because of this whole gimmick of the Charlotte undefeated streak, they clearly didn't want Charlotte to lose at the WrestleMania. So, you know, they kind of backed themselves into a corner in that way. And, you know, it's a shame. I agree. It felt a bit premature, but the match itself was just, you know, excellent. And the moment after the victory was very special as well. And, you know, it's one of those things you've got to give some credit to the women's talent on the WWE, that when they do win titles, the moment certainly feels, you know, quite an emotional one. And, you know, it's evident in the way that they react that it means a lot to them when they do win these belts, more so than the men. And, you know, it makes these title changes, you know, feel important, even if they are coming at increasing frequency.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was an excellent match, and the after-match celebration absolutely gets across. And Bayley's character is great at that anyway. You know, you get across the whole emotion and the feeling. You know that it really does genuinely mean something to her. I mean, the rate that we're going at, you know, Charlotte will have broken her own father's 16-time world champion reign by next year's WrestleMania. And it's because what I'm expecting to happen is she wins the title back at Fastlane. And then what? She loses it the next night on Raw and then wins it back at WrestleMania. No, this is what I really want to get to before we close out tonight is, for me, more, it seems like 2017 is the year of the title change in WWE, you know, kind of not just a change, but flip flopping titles way, way too much. I mean, you go down the two main rosters within WWE on Raw and on SmackDown. And aside from the tag team titles on SmackDown, which actually changed in the last few days of December, and the Universal title, which is, we're expecting to change hands at Fastlane anyway. Every title has changed hands in this calendar year, and some of them more than once, some of them twice, you know, two, three times even. So, I don't mind titles changing hands quickly at where the timing is right. You know, I know we've spoke about this before, is I like a good mix between, you know, long reigning champions and quick changes, mixing things up. It feels a bit more authentic. I think, you know, if everyone has a title reign for a year, obviously it gets boring, it gets stale, but I just don't like this, you know, titles changing hands willy nilly here, there, constantly, everywhere. Before, you know, we're heading into WrestleMania and the WWE Championship has changed hands twice in the space of a month. So I'm not too happy with the number of changes that we've had this year.
There have been quite a few. At this moment in time, I don't have a big problem with it, just because, if anything, it almost felt like there were too few title changes last year. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a long title reign. In fact, it's normally a good thing because, you know, in theory, the longer the title reign, the more it means when that title reign comes to an end. And we saw that, you know, a good example was New Day dropping their tag titles you know, a couple of months ago to Cesaro and Cesaro and Sheamus.
Sheamus. Yeah,
that's right. And, you know, when they dropped that, you know, the tag straps, then the reaction from the crowd was almost one of shock because they'd held it for so long. And it obviously was pushed as, look how long they've held the titles. You know, it's a record breaking title reign. But when they dropped the belts, you know, it really meant something. Whereas if the tag team titles were changing every 2 weeks, a title change would mean less and less, to the point that the titles would mean almost nothing. You know, titles can be, you know, Vince Russo described titles in wrestling as a prop. And, you know, yes, they are, but these props are things that, you know, are some of the best ways of getting talent over. You know, there's so many wrestlers, you know, in the history of wrestling who have become huge, huge stars, huge draws because they've become champions. You know, becoming a champion should mean something. And it's when everyone becomes a champion, that, you know, the whole importance of titles and title reigns and being a champion means less and less. You know, and that's one of the drawbacks of somebody like Naomi winning the title now. You know, on the SmackDown roster, you know, it won't be long before every single female on the SmackDown roster has at some point held the title. And if that's the case, then what does the title even mean then? You know, it'd be similar for the other titles. You know, if on the Raw tag team title roster, you know, most or in the end, all of the tag teams end up holding those belts. You know, what does it mean for the title if everyone holds it? You know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the title, a title's only meaningless if you make it meaningless. You know, and Vince Russo, you know, God, you know, rue the day that if he ever comes back into it. I look at what kind of gets me is I look at that that WWE Championship reign there of John Cena, you know, and we spoke about that at the Rumble, you know, him winning, you know, this records equaling as it's, you know, purported to be, record equaling 16th title. It should have been a huge, huge thing. It really should have been a big thing and a great big fuss made about it. But they didn't make too much of a fuss. It was almost a giveaway that it wasn't going to last. And it was like, you know, such a significant thing to happen in, you know, in this industry, the way that the business is put out and the way that, you know, that Ric Flair's title record has always been put over, for him to, you know, equal it, not make much about it, and then lose it just a few weeks later. I think it's
that's right.
I mean, I just find it disappointing. I just find it disappointing and a real missed opportunity for John Cena and that title.
Yes, you know, I mean,
there was something there. There was something big to be made of that. And I feel that, you know, flip flopping the title on him just kind of cheapened it a little bit.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, for example, I mean, with that Cena record equaling title win, what they should have done the following, well, sorry, two nights later on SmackDown, was almost based the whole SmackDown show as a celebration of John Cena equaling that record and having perhaps Ric Flair come out and celebrate with him and having segments throughout the show, just, you know, little clip, you know, special celebration at the start of the show with everyone from the roster coming out, and even, you know, video segments from, you know, talents on Raw and SmackDown, and even talents from the past who, you know, could have talked about what a historic, significant event it was. And yet, you know, barely any recognition of it. You're right. And, you know, that again would have helped to kind of get over just how important titles are, especially that belt being the historic title content, the historic WWE title with its lineage going back to the start of the company. But, you know, we'll have to see how things go. I mean, clearly the chances are there will be one or two more title changes at Fastlane, and there almost will be several title changes at WrestleMania. It's where it goes after that. You know, if we still continue to see, you know, from month to month, you know, 2, 3, 4 title changes every month, then, you know, by the time we head to SummerSlam, you know, it'd be very difficult to argue that titles haven't been devalued. So, you know, they need to just be careful. Title changes and title matches are a good way to keep ratings strong or to try and boost ratings. But, you know, that's a short-term fix. And we saw it with TNA, for example. I mean, they were having, especially when Russo was booking, regular title changes to the extent that they meant nothing for ratings whatsoever, you know, within a short matter of time. So they just need to be careful with that. But it's a very valid point that you raise.
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll leave that one for now. Otherwise, I can go on forever on that point anyway. So our last one before we do close up. This week, Teddy Long being announced as the latest inductee into this year's Hall of Fame.
Yes, that's right. I think he's the third person now announced for the Hall of Fame after Kurt Angle. And who's the other one now?
Rock and Roll Express.
Oh, that's right. How could I forget? So, yes, again, you know, absolutely fine with that as an announcement. You know, Teddy Long's been in and around the wrestling business for, 30 plus years. You know, started out as a referee, in the likes of Georgia, Championship Wrestling, WCW, NWA, and, then became a manager in the late 80s for, the tag team combination known as Doom, Butch Reed and Ron Simmons. And, was a really good manager, I felt, and, eventually ended up in WWE, firstly as a referee again. And then we saw him in different roles and most famously as, general manager on SmackDown and, various catchphrases such as holla, 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 and player, all of these things, you know, really, endeared him towards the fans. And, he stood the test of time. He's been around for a long, long time, you know, very well liked, you know, within the business. And, he's somebody who, certainly also got over for announcing tag team match main events on SmackDown too, didn't he? There's barely a SmackDown that passed without him not announcing a SmackDown tag team main event. He's somebody who's very well liked and, has been a valuable asset in the WWE for a long time. So, now that he's no longer part of the active roster, it's nice to see him get some recognition and certainly look forward to hearing what he has to say at the Hall of Fame in a few weeks' time.
I'm certainly looking forward to that myself. You know, really charismatic guy and definitely nice to see him get some recognition. But before we do close out, Mo, anything you would like to plug, any little holla hollas you like to give yourself?
I'm going to put over another British wrestling company. This is a company called What Culture Pro Wrestling. So there's a website, What Culture is the website, hence the What Culture Pro Wrestling name. And they launched a pro wrestling promotion, I think it was last year, possibly the year before. They've become a fairly popular company. They put a lot of their shows out on YouTube. They've got an active YouTube channel and they drew 2,500 fans to Milton Keynes for an internet pay-per-view last weekend and had Jim Ross and Matt Stryker on commentary. And Jim Ross will be one of their regular commentators going forward. And they use, a lot of the best independent talent around, the likes of Alberto Del Rio and Rey Mysterio. And most notably last weekend, they announced a World Cup tournament, with wrestlers from around the world, 64 wrestlers in total, and competing in various tournaments around the globe starting next month here in the UK with the United Kingdom tournament. And that will culminate in a four-day finale where they're down to 16 wrestlers, and that will take place on four consecutive days at the end of August. So, that's something that's certainly well worth looking forward to. And this will be all available for free on YouTube on their channel as well. So you'll get to see a lot of great wrestlers that are not in the WWE, a lot of past WWE superstars, as well as some of the best British talent as well, such as Will Ospreay. And, it's going to be a very intriguing tournament. And with Jim Ross calling it, it certainly will be a very entertaining product to see. So yet again, if you can't get enough wrestling out there, What Culture Pro Wrestling have got some great things lined up for this year, most notably with this tournament. So keep an eye out on YouTube on their channel for that throughout the year. Any plugs from you, Andy?
Not too much from me, sadly. My 9-till-5 doldrum of regular work is taking its toll at the moment. I'm so busy with that. I don't really seem to have much time for too much else, other than this, of course, and a couple of other bits. So, not too much from me at the moment, I'm afraid. But we'll see. Hopefully, things the load will lighten, and I'll get my scribbling pen out again.
Oh, it'd be nice for me to pull that out once in a while. Been in retirement for several years.
Yeah, I need to get mine out with semi-retirement anyway. Grapple fans, that wraps up this this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Don't forget, of course, you can keep in touch with the show on Twitter at PW_Index. As always, I want to thank Mo Chatra for joining me. And we want to thank all of you for listening and hitting that download button as always. But until next week.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.